Well, yeah, thanks everyone for coming to this session. I think it's a really important one. As Marxists, we want to overthrow all oppression. That is kind of the key thing that drives us. We want to end an oppressive and exploitative system and replace it with a classless society. And so that means not just throwing ourselves into struggles against oppression wherever they exist, but also discussing the theoretical basis. So where does oppression come from? How does it work? How do we end it? I think privilege politics is a very popular rival framework to Marxism for understanding oppression. But I think it's also that theoretical understanding is a barrier to actually ending oppression. So what is, privilege theory? These are kind of the key tenets of it. So it's a framework. Its central argument is that if you don't experience a certain form of oppression, you directly benefit from that oppression. So men directly benefit or gain privileges from the oppression of women. White people gain privilege from the oppression of Black people, and so on. It sets up a framework where every single one of us is both an oppressor and also oppressed simultaneously, and where basic rights, if they're only held by a certain section of the population, become unearned privileges. And some of the people that I'm referencing when I talk about privilege theory are Frances Kendall, who was a prominent so-called consultant for organisational change, Peggy McIntosh, the Combahee River Collective, SDS, which was an organisation kind of in the 60s and 70s. But I think privilege politics today is often taken as almost common sense, but it is something that's been theorised over time, and that's kind of what I'm referring to. I think privilege politics and privilege theory is almost hegemonic today on campuses and among middle class circles. And I think one of the reasons for that is that it doesn't challenge ruling class ideology. So the ruling class attempts to convince us constantly that when they oppress refugees, for example, they're doing that in the interests of the working class. They're doing it for us. That when they wage wars and commit mass murder in countries like Afghanistan and Iraq, that the working class benefits from that. So the ruling class tries to convince us we benefit from all of the types of oppression that they enact that we don't experience. And privilege politics doesn't challenge any of that narrative. And because of that, it can be pretty easily taken up and promoted by ruling class figures. I think the popularity of privilege politics exists for a similar reason to the popularity of individualist solutions to the climate crisis. So with the climate crisis, if the ruling class can get away with saying all individuals are responsible for that crisis because we don't use keep cups, for example, well, that takes the heat off the actual capitalists who are causing the crisis. I mean, privilege politics operates in a very similar way. It lets the ruling class and capitalism off the hook by blaming all individuals. I think the theory is deeply individualistic, and it can't explain where oppression comes from, how it actually functions, or how to fight it. And privilege theory didn't exist either during the highest points of the fight against oppression. So in the civil rights movement, for example, privilege theory didn't exist. In the mass movements across the world in the 60s, it didn't exist. It emerged from the defeat of this high point of mass movements against oppression. And then it became popularized in the 80s and 90s, when movements against oppression were at an all-time low and when politics was becoming dominated by individualism. It's particularly popular among the middle class, as I said, so often, you know, academics, professionals. It's spread across university campuses, but also in NGOs and in state bureaucracies and through things like corporate cultural sensitivity training. Where bosses are organised to convince their employees that they all oppress each other as opposed to the bosses being the ones that oppress them. In contrast to all of that, Marxism offers a theoretical framework which not only can explain the origins of different forms of oppression, but also provides an answer to the question of how we can end it. How can we fight oppression in the here and now, but also how can you abolish it altogether for good? And in contrast to privilege theory, the moments when Marxism has been the most popular have always been at the high points of struggle against oppression, because it's a theory that helps to instruct us in fighting oppression itself. So I'm going to go through some of the central tenets of privilege theory and then also how Marxists differ on those. So yeah, the first question is, I think worth asking, is who gains from oppression? Privilege theory answers that by saying basically all individuals. Marxism, on the other hand, argues that it's the capitalist class who benefits from and creates oppression. This is a little chart I've drawn to help you understand it. Privilege theory argues that every single person is complicit in and part of enacting the oppression of anyone who experiences a form of oppression that you don't. Frances Kendall explains it. She says, any of us who have race privilege, which all white people do, is racist by definition because we benefit from a racist system. So according to privilege theory, all of us are an oppressor. I thought I'd do an exercise. So put your hand up if there are types of oppression that exist, but that you don't experience. Yeah, extremely unlikely that anyone's not going to put that. Yeah. Okay. So all of you, everyone who just raised their hand, you are the oppressors if you ascribe to privilege theory. Every single one of you, all of you benefit from oppression. And so you expand it out, and this theory creates a view of society as a war of all against all. Every individual is simultaneously oppressed and oppressing. A straight black woman is oppressed by me, but she's responsible for oppressing gay black women, and so on. And a particularly heinous example of how that gets applied in Australia sometimes is claims by some people on the left that refugees who flee wars are tortured by the Australian government and then end up in Australia, that those people are settlers, that they're complicit in and part of the oppression of Aboriginal people in Australia. In contrast to that, Marxists would argue these refugees are oppressed violently by many of the same ruling institutions that violently oppress Aboriginal people, and that both of these groups have a common interest in overcoming all of those institutions. So what's the Marxist argument about this? Well, yeah, Marxists argue that all working class people have a shared common interest in fighting against oppression together. We obviously don't all experience the exact same types of oppression. The working class is huge and diverse, but all of us are oppressed and we can all work together to overcome oppression. Our argument is that the central dynamic of the capitalist system is class exploitation. Every economy in the world is built upon that as its core foundation. And particular forms of oppression exist to facilitate class exploitation, and ruling class institutions enforce that oppression. Working class people obviously can take up bad ideas about oppression, so things like racism, homophobia, and so on, but it's the ruling class who materially creates and benefits from oppression. Whereas working class people do not benefit from any forms of oppression. The more oppressed that any particular section of the working class is, the harder it is for the entire working class to overcome oppression altogether. The lower that women's wages are, for example, the lower men's wages will often be pushed as well. So in Australia, male-dominated trade unions were a huge part of the fight for equal pay. And they recognise that that fight wasn't just about self-interest and, you know, protecting their own wages by raising women's, but also it was about solidarity. So a worker from the Clerks Union in 1937, going back a very big way, the way that he explained the reason he was fighting for equal pay was equal pay means the establishment of economic independence for women and provides a basis upon which they can struggle to secure the consummation of full equality. And it plays out in all different ways. So homophobia and gender roles put constraints and controls on everyone's sexuality and gender identity. Homophobia obviously oppresses non-heterosexual people in the most intense way, but it also prevents straight people from being able to fully and openly experience their own sexuality. Straight people don't benefit from homophobia. On the contrary, they'd be better off if it didn't exist. Or you can look at racism as well and some of its earliest origins. So very early on, it was used and kind of created to persecute black slaves. And the reason that this ideology was come up with at all and that slaveholders needed this ideology was to prevent black and white slaves and servants from banding together against the slaveholders. Racism was an obstacle not only against the freedom of the black slaves, but also against the white slaves and servants. It meant that all of their struggles were far weaker. And the way that former slave and abolitionist Frederick Douglass put it was they divided both in order to conquer each. And Marx similarly argued it would be impossible for the American working class to liberate itself without first ending slavery. So particular forms of oppression are used not only to grind down those they specifically oppress, but also to hold down the working class as a whole. So yeah, coming back to this question, who benefits from privilege theory? Oppression. Privilege theory says every single individual is both an oppressor and oppressed. Marxism says the capitalist class are the oppressors, and they use specific forms of oppression to hold down the entire working class. Next question is, where does oppression come from? Privilege theory can't explain this, and it doesn't really try to. I think it's a very important question, though, to contend with if you do want to defeat oppression, because it provides the key to understanding how we can dismantle it altogether and whether it's even possible to do that. So for privilege theory, oppression is a constant and relatively static feature of society that's generated sort of by individuals, but then sometimes also mediated through institutions. For Marxists, though, oppression is historical. It's something which has particular origins, and it changes over time according to the needs of class societies. So oppression originated with the advent of class-divided societies, and prior to that, oppression didn't exist in pre-class societies. When class first emerged and a minority class had to assert dominance over the majority in order to control wealth, oppression emerged. And then it's kind of shifted and changed in different forms of class society since then. And an example of that transition is the Montagnais and Scarpe people in what's now known as Canada, where a researcher found that they say the lack of a marked division of labour prevailed until recently in the camp of the Northwest River Indians. A man and his wife would come together from the woods, each carrying a log. A father and daughter would saw wood together. A man might hold a fussing child while the mother calmly did something else, feeling no compulsion to take over. But gendered oppression was forced brutally onto the Montagnais by Jesuits who were sent there to integrate them into the capitalist fur trade. So these people, it wasn't this automatic thing that the men wanted to oppress the women who were around them. Instead, they were forced to. So the Jesuits used basically torture to force parents to discipline their children. They would lock up men who refused to discipline their wives or who considered divorce. Before that, gender oppression did not exist. So for Marxists, oppression is not something that has always existed and will always exist. It's historically specific. And today you can see how it's enforced by a whole different range of institutions. So the police and the courts structurally oppress Muslims in this country and Aboriginal people, people who live in housing commissions and so on. The visa system oppresses migrants through imposing horrific conditions upon them, which tie them to their bosses. The media, which is run and owned by capitalists, drums up racist panics like the narrative in Melbourne that supposedly Sudanese gangs are disrupting the streets. And the media also whips up panics about LGBTI people. And there are all different other institutions as well that are set up to oppress us on the basis of sexuality, gender, and all different other characteristics as well. Another question where Marxists differ from privilege theory is the question of what is privilege? So for privilege theory, it prevents advantages that should just be basic rights as unearned privileges. So things like the right to vote, that's presented as a privilege that we hold in Australia over those in dictatorship, or the right to not work in a sweatshop, the right to higher wages, and so on. These things are presented as unearned privileges for those who have them. The right for white people to not get lynched in America's South, the right of people who are citizens of Australia to quit their jobs without fear of deportation, the right for many men to not be afraid on the streets at night of being sexually harassed. All of these things are presented as unearned privileges And Peggy McIntosh, who is one of the earliest kind of people to lay out an explanation of privilege theory, puts it like this. I've come to see privilege as an invisible package of unearned assets that I can count on cashing in every day, about which I was meant to be oblivious. For Marxists, though, those things are not privileges. Those things are basic rights, and they're ones that the capitalist class has always tried to deprive us of, that different sections of the working class have had to fight in order to retain and win, but that have been other sections of the working class have been deprived of them. So Clementine Ford argues that equality comes from people either sacrificing their privilege or having it forcefully taken away from them. Marxists argue instead we need to throw ourselves into the struggles of every oppressed group and fight for them to have the rights that they are deprived of. It's not by us taking away basic rights of some oppressed groups that others will be liberated. So lowering wages of men, for example, in order to raise women. Instead, we argue that everyone needs to throw themselves into the struggle for higher wages to women. And so what is privilege for Marxists? For us, privilege means wealth and power gained from the exploitation of others. So privilege is the enormous wealth that Gina Rinehart has amassed through exploiting mine workers. Privilege is the money, stocks, spaceships that Jeff Bezos has accumulated through other people's labour. And it's those privileges that need to be stripped away from the capitalist class. Their right to ownership over business, over natural resources, over human labour. That's what we want to dismantle. So how do we challenge oppression? Well, privilege theory also doesn't provide an answer to that, past calls to check your privilege or to shut up and listen to renounce aspects of your privilege in order to help others somehow. It lays out a view in which we're all inevitably oppressing each other. Sympathy is possible, pity is possible, but true solidarity is not. And what I mean by true solidarity is the way that Aboriginal elder and activist Lilla Watson put it. She said, if you've come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. Privilege theory, taken to its logical conclusion, posits that none of our liberation is bound up with each other's. Instead, each individual's privileges and freedoms are rooted in the oppression of others. Well, Marxism takes the opposite view. Our argument is that the liberation of all oppressed people is bound up together, and that the oppression of each particular group deepens the oppression of everyone else. In that way, I think Marxism and privilege theory are completely incompatible. I don't think there's anything that Marxism can take from privilege theory and adopt into itself. And for us, oppression can be challenged through a combination of radicalism and solidarity, through fighting back against the structures that hold us all down. One example of that is a strike that I was really proud to stand on the picket lines of 2 years ago at Chemist Warehouse in Melbourne, where Chemist Warehouse workers are being both extremely underpaid, and most of them were migrant workers, but also they experience very severe bullying and sexual harassment from their managers. Anyone who complained was threatened with the sack. One of the union organisers said at the time, a lot of migrant women and labour hire women are terrified to speak out. They've seen it happen before and they know that nothing was done about it. So how did they address this? Privilege theory wouldn't give you a framework to address this. Instead, what they did do is they went on strike. So these workers stood strong on picket lines against trucks that were coming to try and break those picket lines, against management who sent down basically thugs to the picket lines as well. And men and women together fought and they won their demands. They didn't separate out all these demands as separate questions that were divorced from each other, wages, sexual harassment and so on. Instead, they fought around them together on a shared basis. And so we're for organising and uniting different sections of the oppressed to fight back against our shared oppression. We're for throwing ourselves into all fights against oppression, whether it's Black Lives Matter protests, Palestine protests, the fight for equal marriage, every single strike and picket line, the fight for refugee rights at the Park Hotel in Melbourne, and so on. And a lot of these have also seen really serious wins. So the last question to address, I think, is, yeah, can oppression ever actually be ended? The most optimistic that privilege theory ever gets about this question is that maybe some small minority of people will renounce their privileges and help oppressed people out of a sense of kind of sympathy and pity. Privilege theory doesn't have a way out of oppression. If everyone is involved in and benefits from oppressing everyone else, who is left to overthrow oppression? And often that kind of leads to focusing in and honing in on whoever, you know, at the moment is seen as the most oppressed. And that category often changes. So sometimes it's trans people, sometimes it's sex workers and so on, that, you know, bits of the left will obsess about, like, oh, now they're the most oppressed, because they think that only the most oppressed can fight oppression because everyone else is busy oppressing each other. Marxism, on the other hand, argues oppression can be ended. It has not always existed and it doesn't need to continue. Capitalism has created an enormous class, the working class, which is both oppressed and also powerful. It's huge and diverse. Working class people suffer from all different forms of oppression. But what we have in common is that we don't benefit from the oppression of others. And we have a material interest. We have something to gain from ending all forms of oppression. And the working class isn't only oppressed. Marx described the working class as the universal class. And that wasn't because, you know, it suffers the most extreme oppression and exploitation. He used those words because the working class sits at the heart of capitalism. We have the power to overthrow capitalism as well as the interests. We make every single thing run that is necessary for this system to function. The manufacturing, the trucking, the stores, the trains, the hospitals, the schools, the mining, the construction, all of it. And working class struggles point in the direction of overthrowing the system as a whole, not just winning particular sectional individual demands, but of overthrowing the whole system. And because of that, the working class is capable of liberating all of humanity. When the working class enters into struggle, we challenge the ideas we hold about ourselves and others, and we create new ones, which can begin to show what a liberated society might look like. Mass struggles create a totally new forum for interaction where we're confronting the ruling class and working on a shared oppositional project against our oppressors. It means we become more confident both in ourselves and those around us. Through resistance, we become ourselves and we impose our collective will upon the oppressive structures that hold us down. And there's this really lovely quote by a worker who was involved in the kind of radical struggle in Italy in the late 60s and early 70s, who I thought really sort of sums it up. So he says of his experience for the first time in this struggle, says, "The important moments of my life tended to become one with the collective moments of struggle that were being shared by the entire working class. I felt that every day I took on increased political responsibilities, but I also took on new dimensions as a human being." So I think we need to organize struggles against oppression and throw ourselves into all of the ones that emerge around us. And it's those struggles, not privilege checking, that can tear down the material structures that oppress us and lead towards liberation. But I'll end there.